Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Selling Greenville, your favorite real estate podcast here in lovely Greenville, South Carolina. I'm your host, as always, Stan McCune. Joining with me, co-host Joel Mangin. And this is going to be a pilot episode for Joel co-hosting as we discuss market stats in the Greenville area. So I'm excited for that. But usual housekeeping that we got to do first, you can find all of my contact information in the show notes if you need to reach out to me for any of your local real estate needs. And I don't know why you would need to reach out to Joel, but if you need to reach out to him as well, reach out to me and then I'll connect you. I'll connect you with Joel. I don't think you'll need to reach out to Joel though. Just a reminder as always as well, please like, rate, review, subscribe. If you're watching this on YouTube, comment. By the way, I should mention as well, YouTube recently picked up podcasts as a audio feature. If it's confusing, if you're wanting to watch the video for this, there is a separate track for the video. It's all in my same Selling Greenville Pod channel on YouTube. I'm still figuring out whether there is a way for me to not have those be two separate entities. I'm not sure if that's a possibility, but there is now a separate audio and separate video for every podcast on YouTube. So make sure that you actually search for the video if you're wanting to look at all the cool charts that we're going to be looking at today. But as I mentioned before, I have Joel Mangin on the show with me. Joel is a longtime friend, also business partner. We go back a long way. So Joel, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Dan. It's an honor to be here. Thanks for the kind introduction. And I'm excited to talk about stats. So let's get into it.
Yes, stats are so very exciting. In case the audience is wondering, I really felt like, you know, this would be a good opportunity to kind of mix things up when it comes to this episode. This is an episode that I do every month. The Greater Greenville Association of Realtors produces really great data for us every single month. But talking through data sometimes can get boring, sometimes can be dry. So I'm hoping with Joel, maybe this will make things a little bit more interesting, maybe mix things up a bit. So I'm just going to dive right in here. And we're going to dive right into the data, starting with new listings. Now, new listings, there's a lot of very interesting stuff when it comes to the new listing data. I just want to point out a few things real quick. First off, year on year for the month of April. So I'm recording this May 24th. Unfortunately, we just got this data just a few days ago, so I wasn't able to do this earlier. So I apologize for that. That was just a quirk with when the data was released. But we're looking at April's numbers, even though we're here at the end of May. So April's new listings data was 2,226 new listings, which was a whopping 27.5% increase year on year. That's like, that's got to be the largest year on year increase that we've had in several years. If you're looking at the chart on the YouTube video, you can see it is the second largest month of new listings that we've ever had, falling just short of the, I believe that was June of 2022. Let me see, January, February, March, April, May. Yeah, that was June of 2022. And what happened in June of 2022? That was when the mortgage rates started to go up. And that was when it became very apparent, okay, this period of very, very low rates is coming to an end. And so we had a tremendous spike that summer. And as it turns out, April of this year, we had a similar spike. So I don't know what that means for the rest of the year so far. We'll have to see. But a really huge new listings number for the month of April 2024. Any thoughts you have on any of that, Joel?
Yeah, so I noticed this is really seasonal, and that other high watermark you just pointed out in 2022 seems, you know, anomalous when you look at the other spikes. So I guess my question is, what do you know? Are there any factors that kind of led into this? Was this a surprise to you, or can you talk about that?
Yeah, this is a surprise for me. So if you're following real estate as closely as I do, you hear a lot of people talking about the so-called lock-in effect. The lock-in effect is people that have really, really low mortgage rates and can't move in effect because they would have to be getting going from a 3% mortgage rate to a 7% rate potentially or something like that. And the result of that lock-in effect has been that we have seen the new listings data from, I mean, if you go back to, if you look at that peak in June, you can see that there was a precipitous fall, right? This is if you're looking on video again here, I'm pointing out December of 2023 was the lowest new listings number since December of 2018. So we had the lowest number of new listings in 5 years in December of 2023. And then we had a very weird crown pattern that happened in, sorry, that was December of 22. Then we had a really strange crown pattern that happened throughout the year in 2023, where we, you know, it just kept going up and down. And so where I'm going with all of this is that we clearly saw a lock-in effect that happened during this period of time when new listings data really, really dropped. What it looks like is happening now is that we're starting to see pent-up new listings demand happening. So these are people that need to move. Most people that are sellers are also buyers. These are people moving by and large. These could also be investors deciding that, you know, hey, that investment I bought in 21 or 22 isn't working out the way I hoped it would. And so what we're seeing is we're seeing this new listings data catch up to what it would have been, I think, had we, you know, just kind of continued with that lower rate environment.
So a moment ago, you said pent up new listing demand. That's new listing supply, essentially, right?
So we need to think about supply in two different ways.
Okay.
And this actually is a good point that you bring up because this data can be manipulated by doomers to try to make different points. There is active supply and there is new supply. Active
Okay.
supply is just any given time you take a snapshot of the market, how many properties are for sale, that is active supply. New listings are what we look at basically over the course of the entire month. It's not a one day snapshot, it is a month snapshot. How many new listings came online during that month? So that's a really important detail because just because new listings skyrocket doesn't necessarily mean that supply skyrockets, right? Because it can be offset by demand. If new listings increase dramatically, likely demand also increases dramatically, and that's something we'll talk about here in a little bit. So let's go ahead, unless you had any other questions. Okay, let's go ahead and move
No.
on to the next one, which is pending sales. So now we're getting into the demand side of things. Pending sales is the count of properties in which offers have been accepted in a given month. And just a fair warning to everyone, warning that I always make is that this pending sales data is always inaccurate for the most recent month, which is in this data, April. So I'll come back to April here in a second. But we got to look at the March data. The March data was down. Pending sales were down 6.3% year on year. It was 1,425 pending sales versus 1,521 in March of 2023. So that was a minus 6.3% increase or 6.3% decrease. So that is something that I don't think is particularly noteworthy. We had several months of increases, but those increases had been going down. So November was 10.8% increase in pending sales, then December 9.8, then January 5.8, February 5.4, and now we have a decrease in pending sales. And the short reason for that, and I kind of prepped this before last month's episode when we went over this, was that March was just a massive month last year. So we're comparing against a really, really massive month. It's not really as noteworthy as it would appear that the pending sales for March of this year did not meet the pending sales of March of last year, because March of last year was really for by 2023 standards was a bit of an anomaly of a month. And if you're looking at the dot plot, you can see that March and April were neck and neck, really hand in hand, but those 2 months stand out last year versus the rest of the year. So we had fewer pending sales, fewer homes going under contract March of last year. But I'm not drawing any major conclusions about that, what that means for the market. As far as what pending sales will shake out as for April of this year, since, like I said, April data, which currently is saying only 967 pending sales, which would be catastrophic for a Greenville April. That data is going to be revised. So last month thought that March was 960, and then that got revised to what I just said, 1,425. April is currently showing 967. So that's probably going to get revised into the mid 1400s as well. But that's still going to be a decrease. So we're still going to see a year-on-year decrease, April of 24 versus April of 23. Again, those were two really big months. Those were the only really big months of the year for pending sales that we had.
Stan, I have a question on this. What explains the drastic revision there? I mean, going from 900 to 1400, that seems like more than just like we're waiting on a few places to report. That just seems like a huge amount. So what's causing that?
That's a great question. I mean, this is all coming from MLS data. And for whatever reason, there's just a few data points that that tend to be inaccurate. And I have no idea. All of this data does get revised over the months. Like even the new listings data that we just went over, like I looked at March and the new listings for March actually got revised higher than what they were last month when we were looking at this data. So this all gets revised, it gets updated. But to be completely honest, I would have to talk to the multiple listing service in Greenville to figure out exactly why, you know, we're talking about like a 50% decrease in the pending sales versus what they should be. And I couldn't tell you.
Because in your experience, it's 50% of homes under contract are not dropping, right? I mean, that's the one thing I can think of where it's like, oh, you know, somebody pulled out where it was pending and then maybe started at the end of the month, it was pending, but then they pulled out. I'm sure that would explain a percentage, but not the, you know, 50% you just referred to. So yeah, just curious about that.
Yeah, I have no idea. That's actually something I plan to look into because I'm actually now overseeing the MLS committee as part of my responsibilities with the board at the Greater Greenville Association of Realtors. So that is a role that I just took recently, and we've had other things going on with NAR settlements and buyer agency commission compensation things. But this is on my radar, something that I plan to address. Let's move on to closed sales. This one is typically a pretty accurate number. It's the count of actual sales that closed in a given month. April was up 15.8% year on year. It was 1,394 versus April of last year, 1,204. Now, I've explained this a few times. Closed sales and pending sales are kind of tied at the hip, right? Because obviously it goes pending and then you go through the whole process and then it closes and then it becomes a closed sale. And so it shouldn't be surprising that it was a pretty high number because we had several months to start the year with increases, and then that results in pending sales, and then that results in a big closed sale number. This is still a bigger number though than I would expect. 15.8%. This is telling me that probably fewer homes, fewer contracts than we have been seeing are falling through. So that's good if you're a seller. I have a hunch, you know, March was down year on year. I have a hunch that we'll probably see a few months that are kind of year on year, you know, for instance, May might be down year on year. And then we might see June up year on year. I think we're going to see this kind of fluctuate a little bit because last year was still not a normal year. You know, like the gap from March to April in closed sales was much different than we would normally have. So I'm expecting that we're still kind of normalizing when it comes to these closed sales, and what we're likely to see is a few down months, a few up months, with the net at the end of the year probably will be a positive, and probably a pretty strong positive year for closed sales versus 2023 is what I think.
Yeah, nothing really stands out to me. Nothing stands out to me too much other than when I just kind of zoom out and look at the historical data. It seems like there's, 14, 15, 16, a really good consistency in the way these numbers move.
Yep.
And what you just referred to kind of feels like echoes of, COVID and the whole disruption that's been happening over the last few years. So it does seem like it's kind of trying to normalize in a way, mm-hmm. but overall it's still trending up, which I find interesting.
Yeah. And, you can see traditionally in most years, June is where the peak is. And so it's usually a gradual gain up to that June peak. And this is what we talk about. The hot market, if you're looking at, the graph that I've got on the video, the hot market is these kind of, depending on the year, 4 or 5 months, starting in usually around April and then ending usually around July. So that's like the peak real estate season. But the peak of the peak is actually through Memorial Day. And that's why most of these years, the top line number that we see is usually in June for closed sales. But if you're a seller and you're listing your home in June, you're not going to experience that, right? Because we're talking about closed sales, not pending sales. Let's go back to the pending data for just 1 second. The pending data, you can see oftentimes peaks much earlier. So this is in 2018, it peaked in March. In 2019, it peaked in May. And then, we've got some of these anomalies, after the pandemic. Last year, it peaked in April. So that's pending sales. So if you're a seller, it feels busier during the spring than it does during the summer, because these closed sales, you're not feeling that if you're a seller, right? You're feeling the pending sales. That's where the actual demand comes through. And then the closed sales kind of lags from that data.
So just a quick follow-up to that, Stan. If I'm considering selling in the next year, should I just wait until that, spring of the next year? Is it worth waiting to hit that peak, or how does that affect my strategy?
I wouldn't say that you should wait. I mean, most people don't have the luxury of just waiting a year. If you do have the luxury of just waiting a year to move or to sell, that's certainly a consideration, but I don't think that the seasonality of real estate should be the only consideration. Like I said, these summer months still tend to be the peak months of the year. It's just that you've missed the, after Memorial Day, you've missed the peak of the peak. But that doesn't mean that there's still not good months to sell real estate in. Generally speaking, where sellers really start to feel really slow, and particularly the past couple of years, is that fourth quarter. That's when we have really seen, that's when all those holidays are coming through. That's when all the kids are in school, all of that. That's when you really have to start making difficult decisions. Do I really want to put my home up for sale during the fourth quarter when we know that this is the slowest time of the year? Or do I just want to wait another few months and try to capture some of the spring winds of the next year? For me, when I personally am selling real estate, I don't personally factor in, okay, if I miss the Memorial Day deadline, that now I need to wait until, March of next year. To me, that's a pretty extreme approach, because there's still a lot of demand to come in. The other thing is that we don't know exactly how the demand flows are going to even play out this year, because we are still normalizing in this market. And, just like I just showed with some of these, some of the peak months in the past 4 years have been different than what they were in previous years. So could we see a scenario in which we have a busier than normal June or a busier than normal July? Absolutely. We just don't know. We can only look at historically and make some predictions. We know for a fact that some demand comes out of the market after Memorial Day. How much of that? It's hard to say.
I think I like what you said there, because I shouldn't be trying to optimize, you know, and it's not like you mentioned, not everybody has the choice or the opportunity to optimize in that way, but it's more about finding the best option with the best real estate agent and the best presentation for your home and for your situation. And that's what really matters on a granular level. Whereas looking at this data, you can't really work backward from it, because this is just more, you know, almost like random noise in a way regarding, and it, if you're looking at it through the lens of one person.
And real estate, like the stock market, and this of course isn't an investment advice. Nothing that we say in this podcast is investment advice. But real estate, like so many other things that are classified as investments, the same adage applies as it does for other things. You cannot time the market. You can't. Like, people try to capture lightning in a bottle by timing the market. It doesn't work. The market might crash next year. What if you hold out? What if you say, well, you know what? I want to capture the spring, you know, busyness of next year. What if rates go even higher? What if we have 8.5% mortgage rates and all of these numbers are way down next year? So that would be, again, we have a known commodity right now, and the market is doing pretty well overall for both buyers and sellers. You know, it's not too crazy of a seller's market. And it's not a buyer's market, at least not according to this data. But it's a slower seller's market than what it has been. And so I would rather take what I have now versus hope for something, in the future. All right, moving on to the next slide. Days on market until sale. Days on market went down 11.1%. So we went all the way down from April of 2023 was 54 days on market. We went all the way down to 48 days on market in April of 2024. So back down to the 40s for the first time since November. Now, that great data if you're a seller, right? You're selling your home more quickly. If you're a buyer, that's not so positive. Although 48 days is still substantially better than when we were hovering around 20 for multiple years between 2021 and 2022. It's interesting that it's, you know, all of these trends are trending lower than what they were a year ago. And so even though I keep hearing people saying that they feel like the market is shifting more towards the buyer's market, a lot of this isn't captured in the data for a variety of reasons. I've been waiting on this days on market, you know, these numbers to push back up to what they used to be, right? Because if you look at pre-pandemic, we would consistently have peak months, typically at the beginning of the year, would end up being in the 60s or even higher. Well, we haven't seen the 60s in quite some time. We came really close at the beginning of 2023. I believe that was, hold on, let me see here. Yeah, that was 58 that we hit in March of 2023. So we got really close to hitting that 60-day marker. But now we're back down into the 40s. So homes are still selling relatively quickly in comparison to, you know, historically what has happened. Even if it doesn't feel that way for sellers right now, because they're comparing, they've got recency bias. They're comparing to, you know, a lot of people selling now bought 3-4 years ago when homes were selling overnight, basically. You know, the sign would go in the yard and it'd be under contract within 5 hours kind of thing. The market is not like that, but it also hasn't gone back to what it was pre-pandemic, where, you know, you could take a few weeks for a property that was unique and was in a hot area. You could maybe see it one weekend, let the week go by, and then look at it the second weekend, and it would still be there. That is not the case for homes that are, you know, in hot areas that are desirable homes that have desirable features and all of that, and that are priced correctly. That's obviously a very important detail.
So Stan, the thing that stands out to me here is just the decline from 2012, that peak,
yep,
down to, you know, where we are today. Obviously, there's the pandemic dip, but like, even if you take that out and just look at the line, I just want to ask you, like, where is this headed? Because I know we can't predict the future, but like, are we, does this go back up? Does this stay low? Like, I feel like this just shows that Greenville's been a great market for, you know, a decade plus, but like, what does that mean to you? Or how can we contextualize this in the broader picture?
Well, so, you know, the line reaches its highest over 120 days on market in December of 2011. So that was the worst. That was the month in all of the data that we had that took the longest to sell your home was December of 2011. There's a variety of reasons for that. And yes, you can see that there was a steady decline in this until 2018, and then it kind of normalized until the pandemic happened, and then it went way down, and now it's come back up. It's still below what it was in 2018, 2019. What I think is at some point, if rates kind of stay where they are, I think that we would likely see this line kind of stay about where it is. But here's what's going to happen at some point, most likely, is that mortgage rates are going to come back down. And when mortgage rates come back down, this number is going to drop because we've got all this pent up demand, all these people sitting on the sidelines waiting, you know, they can't afford a home right now, you know, with rates being around 7%. If we see rates go below 6%, all bets are off. This line is going to go way back down again. Days on market is going to plummet back into the 30s. God forbid the 20s. I hope not the 20s. But I could see that. And so I think what we'll probably see for the rest of this year is we'll probably see, you know, this followed the normal trend, right? So the normal trend is that the days on market go down through the summer months and then peak back up during the fall and winter months. It's looking like it's going to peak at a lower number of days on market than it has the past year. But then if mortgage rates come down anytime soon, if we see, you know, and I'm not just talking about like a minor mortgage rates, I'm talking about coming down, you know, like an entire point, for instance, or 100 basis points, then we'll see this number, we'll see days on market go way down again. Homes are going to be selling overnight again, kind of thing, is what I'm concerned about. And I think that that's a very real possibility. So it's going to be years before we see this go back to pre-pandemic norms is what I think. And what I think will be required for us to see that is once all the demand from the baby boomer generation starts to dwindle, because they are really propping up so much of the housing market right now from a demand standpoint. The most active, you know, purchasers of real estate in their 60s to 80s that we have probably ever seen. But census data indicates that by the early 2030s, that will pretty much be done. And so I think, you know, we might be a few years away. We're going to see this go way down, but then we're a few years away from it going back up. And then at that point, you know, we'll probably see something that resembles what it looked like, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago.
So I picked up on two things you said there. There's a pretty tight correlation between interest rates and this days on market number. And then you kind of mentioned the pressure that the boomer generation is kind of still active in a way that's significant, right? So
yep.
Those things I heard, but what you also mentioned in there was you hope the number doesn't go back down to 20. And I guess I would just ask you, I'm not sure why that is. What is there something bad that happens when this number goes that low?
Yeah, that's a market that's really just stressful for everyone. Obviously, that's indicative of an insane seller's market. I consider that to be an unhealthy seller's market, because what's happening when you see days on market at 20, what that indicates is that there, you know, you've got to factor in that there's a lot of homes that, you know, even in an insane seller's market, aren't going to sell for 60, 90 days because they were just overpriced. They've got all sorts of problems, et cetera, et cetera. So for all of that to average out to 20 days on market, that means that a huge portion of the market is selling within 24 to 48 hours, maybe even less than that. That's stressful for buyers. I can't tell you when the market was like that, how many times I would show up at a home to show it and would get a call from the, you know, the listing agent, hey, we just went under contract. And it was like, I mean, in some cases I had driven like an hour to show that home and only to find out that it had just gone under contract. That was the market when buyers might have to put in, you know, 7 or 8 offers before they get one accepted. And sellers, even though, you know, it's kind of fun in a sense to experience that, it's also kind of stressful too when it's that constrained of a market. Things are selling that quickly. There's that much demand and that little supply, which is the only thing that causes that kind of dynamic. You're having to have a ton of showings in your home. You can't discriminate against showings. Like once you list your home, MLS rules are you have to allow showings. So you can't just say, you know, I'm only going to allow 4 showings today. You can't do it legally. You cannot do that. You cannot list your home on MLS and then do something like that. So that become, you know, during this period of time when days on market was so low, we had sellers that were listing their home on a weekend and then going on vacation because it was just so stressful for them to go through all of that. And then you get 25 offers. Well, me as a realtor, if I'm the listing agent or any listing agent, legally, you have to present every one of those offers. Well, that could be a 4-hour conversation, depending on how much detail you go into and all of that. That's also kind of stressful. So it's just there's a lot of reasons why nobody really likes the market to be that intense. It's just a bit much, really, for all parties involved, but particularly for buyers, but even for sellers as well, even though they, once they get to the end of it, they're really happy. But the process is still pretty stressful. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that clarifies a lot. Thanks for explaining that.
Yeah. So let's move on to median sales price. We look at the median to kind of gauge, you know, what's happening in the market. It's not one-to-one. Like this is an appreciating market if this number is going up, or one-to-one that is a depreciating market if it's going down. But at the end of the day, this is loosely speaking what we look at and what we judge the market off of, the trajectory of where it's going. If we get a bunch of months in a row that are positive year-on-year median sales price, that tells you it is an appreciating market. If we get a bunch of months in a row with negative year-on-year, then that is, generally speaking, a depreciating market. So you got to look at this data as a whole. You can't just look at it 1 month at a time. But that being said, let's look at 1 month for now, and then I'll put some flesh on the bones here. April's median sales price was exactly the same as March. We were at 310,000, which is interesting. So no month-on-month increase. Not that uncommon. If you look at past years, you can see that there will be even month-on-month decreases. So we're likely to see that this summer as well. We're likely to see some months that go way up and then some months that recede from that. But year-on-year, it is a 2.4% increase from April of 2023. That was at 302,788. We have now experienced 11 straight months of median sales price year-on-year increases. So this is very clearly an appreciating market, although the appreciation has slowed a bit, right? So we've now had, going back to December of last year, we've had 5 straight months of the rate of the median sales price going up has slowed down. So December was 6.7 year-on-year increase. January was 4.2, down to February 3.2. March went up a little bit to 3.4, but now April is back down to 2.4%. But this is a pretty healthy number. Like if we saw 2.4% appreciation in the Greenville market, most people would be very happy about that. Sellers are still seeing gains. Like, yeah, you might be hearing that and being like, well, that's not good in compared to stocks and compared to the S&P, you know, all that kind of stuff. Well, yeah, real estate's not stocks, right? It doesn't appreciate in the same way that stocks do. It's also not taxed in the same way that stocks are. But I think most people would be happy if we stayed in that 2.4% range. I don't think we will. I think we're still going to see increases that exceed 2.4% here in future months. But that's where we are right now. It's an appreciating market, but it's not an appreciating market like we've seen some other times where we've seen the year-on-year percent, you know, back during the craziness of COVID, some months might be 15 or 20%. Thankfully, we've not seen that.
Dan, my question on this one is, how this seems like a really kind of high level number that's a good way to get an overview. How much has the recent inflation that we've been seeing kind of like at the grocery store or et cetera, does that factor in here at all? Or is this kind of able to kind of smooth that out and be separated?
That's a good question. It's not, these are not inflation adjusted numbers. So you could make the argument, certainly, that the 2.4% year-on-year increase is actually a net decrease if you factored it in for inflation. This is an argument that some people have made, and you can't refute that argument, right? I mean, if you just have your cash in the bank, you're generally speaking, even if you've got a money market account that's, you know, bringing you 4.5%, whatever, you're still generally speaking losing out versus inflation. So these are not inflation adjusted numbers. You can find that number for the national market in other places. We don't analyze it in that way in the for this Greater Greenville Association of Realtors statistics. But yeah, does that answer your question on that?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's kind of what I was getting at. I just wanted to know like how that played into this. And it seems like it's almost like a separate, you'd have to run a separate comparison to kind of get that number.
Yeah, you have to create a whole model in order to create inflation adjusted numbers, which is well above my pay grade because I'm not an economist. But people that really want to get into that, I believe the Federal Reserve has some of that data out there. There's also data that's produced by Housing Wire has some really good stuff like that out there. A few sources like that where you can find some of that. If you really want to look at, okay, what months do we see true inflation adjusted increases versus what months are we just seeing standard appreciation? But the important thing for people to know as they look at this is most people, when they think of home prices, they don't think of it in inflation adjusted dollars, right? All they think about is I bought or these people bought this home in 2019 for $200,000, and now they've got it listed for $300,000, and that seems insane to me. That's the way people look at it. They don't ever analyze the data based on inflation, hardly ever. Only the experts do, from what I have seen. And so we look at this on more of a high level, and for most people that works. Now, the average sales price, which I don't spend as much time focused on because averages are skewed by the homes at the top and the bottom. The median just picks out the middle number in a data set. So that's usually the number that experts use when they are looking at real estate data. But I like to look at the average as well. It's kind of interesting. If you really want to know what the true average price of a home in Greenville is, it's $371,945. So basically $372,000. And that was a 2.6% increase versus April of 2023, which was $362,536. Again, I'm not drawing any major conclusions from this because this number tends to do kind of some wonky things. Like if we have a few million-dollar homes sold in a month, that greatly skews the data in a market like Greenville that doesn't have a ton of million-dollar homes. Or, you know, if we have a single, you know, new construction community that sells 50 units in 1 month, that, you know, even something as basic as that can skew the data, right? We just discussed that the closed sales was what? I think it was like 2,200. So if you get, you know, 50, you know, a community of 50 that sells, that's a part of that 2,200, that's actually a pretty large subset. So I don't draw a whole lot of conclusions from this, but the thing that I find most interesting is that we now have 12 straight months of the average increasing year on year. We've gone all the way up, you know, from, like I said, it was 362,000 in April of 2023. Now it's 371,000. And every single month for the past year has seen a year on year increase. And I suspect that that will likely continue because the luxury housing market is starting to become more of a staple in the Greenville market, and that causes these numbers to go up.
I don't have a question. I just have a comment that this 371 number kind of surprises me. It's higher than I expected.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And again, I would focus more on the 310 number at the median. Like if people ask me what is the average home sale in Greenville, I don't tell them 372. I tell them 310. Because that is a more accurate, even though I'm technically lying because that isn't the average, it's the median, but it's answering the question that people really have, which is, if I were to buy a home right in the middle, what would that be? And that would be $310,000.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Percent of list price received. This is the percentage found when dividing a property's sales price by its most recent list price. So it doesn't take into account price drops. Okay, important detail. Then taking the average for all properties sold in a given month, not accounting for seller concessions. So the two caveats I frequently make is the one I already made, which this is taking the most recent list price. So it's not accounting for price drops. It's not accounting for seller concessions, meaning if a seller is paying for a buyer's closing costs, that's not being factored in here. But with all of those caveats in mind, we saw our first decrease in the percent of list price received in several months in April. It went down only 0.1%. It went down from 98.7% April 2023. Down to 98.6% April 2024, which is exactly the same as what March of 2024 was. So what that means, generally speaking, if you're a seller, you can expect to get 98.6% of what your home is listed for, and likely buyers are going to ask for a little bit of closing costs as well on top of that if your home has been on the market for some time. That's a pretty good... a pretty reasonable assumption to make. And these numbers are really some of the most normal numbers on here, right? These numbers are real close to what we saw in 2019 and in 2018, you know, before things kind of got out of whack during the pandemic.
Yeah. So when I'm looking at this, I see that 101.4 number. So that's basically pandemic time, right? When basically you're getting, it's an outlier as far as these numbers are concerned, where you're getting more than you asked for.
Which one are you looking at? What month?
April of 2022. When you look at the bar chart there on the left.
Yeah. So we had that stretch between, early 2021 and mid 2022 when, you know, when we had those super low rates and when the market really went crazy, where sellers could actually expect to get more than what their home was listed for, as a result of the tremendous demand combined with just insanely low supply, in contrast to the demand. So that pushed prices to do something that they had never done before. That pushed buyers to do things that they had never done before, which was having to offer substantially above what a seller had a home listed for, just in order to win in a bidding war kind of situation. So that's what's happening there.
Yeah, it's that chaos that you were describing earlier.
And it's not fun. Again, it's not fun to go through that, right? If you're a buyer, you know, you've got a certain, you know, max price that you're looking for. Now you have to factor in, also, you're going to have to go above whatever, you know, the seller has the home listed for, pretty much guaranteed, no matter what you end up making an offer on. It just creates a lot of complications. And so this number, 98.6%, that's a very comfortable number for me, for most sellers, for most buyers. Most sellers expect to get a little bit less than what they've listed a home for. And that is the way the market has normally worked. Buyers typically expect that they don't have to pay at or above what a home is listed for unless it has just come on the market. That's a very comfortable number for most people. If it stays like that, I think everyone will be pretty happy with that from the standpoint of this specific data set, the percent of list price received.
So I have a follow-up question here. You see this is now 98.6, indicating things have kind of normalized. Does that help you or factor into when you're helping someone list their home for how to price it?
This number specifically doesn't. What this number helps me, not in terms of pricing a home. Pricing a home, really, you're looking at what the other homes in the area have sold for and then kind of backing into the number that way. I don't, you know, some people might look at this and say, well, I want to get $300,000. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to list it for $305,000. Thinking that I'll get 98.6% of that, which will get me, I don't know if that gets you to 300,000. I can't do that math in my head that quickly. But that's really the wrong way to go about this, because markets don't work that way, right? The 98.6% is the fair market value. You can't game the system. You can't produce your own fair market value for a home. So the reason that 1.4% gap between 100% and 98.6%, that is simply sellers overpricing their home at the end of the day. That is what that is. So sellers that think I can further overprice my home in order to get a higher number, that's just not how real estate markets work. So you've got to look at what things have actually sold for and why, and then price it according to that, and not try to outsmart the markets, because you won't be able to outsmart the market. That's actually a great question. I'm sure that people have thought about that when I've done this podcast in the past, and I'm sure that question has come up. Housing affordability index. I have complained about this number multiple times. I don't even really know what it means anymore. But long story short, if it's at 100. That means that the average household can buy the average priced home, loosely speaking, and it's now at 95. But this number has changed so many different times that I don't even know what to make of it anymore. But long story short, based on the data that we have here, the average household can only afford 95% of the average priced home. Do you have any thoughts of that? That is a 4% decrease year on year from April of 2023, when it was at 99%.
My only thought is I'm trying to understand it. This index measures housing affordability for the region. For example, an index of 120 means the median household income is 120% of what is necessary to qualify for the median priced home. Okay.
So
a lot of medians in there.
Yeah. So Joel, for those of you listening, Joel was just reading off the description of the housing affordability index off of the slide. So basically this, what they're packaging into this 95 number is the median household income, the median priced home, and whatever the prevailing mortgage rates were for that month. And then it's reverse engineering based on those three things. It's coming up with a number where 100 means exactly that the median household income can afford the median priced home based on interest rates. So we want that number to be at 100 or above, generally speaking, for our market to be at least at the most basic level of affordability for our for the people that live in the Greenville area. So at 95, that's not the worst number in the world. You can see that in early 2023, it was in the low 90s. So 95 isn't too bad. But we'd really like to see that number at or above 100, so that average buyers can buy an average house.
Yeah, the description has a final sentence that says a higher number means greater affordability. I wish they would have led with that, because that would have helped me kind of simplify it a little.
Right.
I get it now, where if the number is 100 or greater, that means I've got more buying power, essentially.
Yeah. So think about it this way. We just discussed the median was 310,000, right? That's the median priced home right now. So the average family can only afford, 99% of 95% of that. So that $294,500 home.
And the factors there being the interest rate, their income, and what was the other factor?
The cost of the home itself.
The cost of the home. Yeah. Okay. I think I get it now.
So if we saw interest rates go down, this number should pop back up because interest rates, even though we would see the median price really start to soar at that point, if interest rates went down, the impact on a monthly payment of the interest rates is much greater than, so let's say we went from a 7% mortgage rate to a 5.5% rate. That would have much more impact on housing affordability than it would if, for instance, prices went down by $15,000 or $20,000. So this number will improve if mortgage rates improve. Inventory of homes for sale. This is the number of properties available for sale and active status at the end of a given month. We discussed that briefly earlier. This is also a number that is frequently inaccurate for the most recent month. So for instance, March, when these stats came out last month, March was at 4,215. That got revised down again by 500, basically down to 3,728. But the interesting detail is that makes March year on year 24.5% higher inventory than March of 2023, which was 2,994. April came in at 4,493. That's probably going to get revised down into the 3,900 range. That will also be a massive increase from April 2023. That was 2,896. This is one of the most eye-popping numbers that I'm looking at here, because what this tells me is that we are now at inventory levels that are pretty much right on par with what we saw pre-pandemic. So if you're a buyer, okay, you have as many options for housing right now as you would have 5 or 6 years ago. Now, those options are a lot more expensive and mortgage rates are a lot higher and a lot of things have changed, but you have as many options in terms of the number of homes for sale as you had, as you had a few years ago, pre-pandemic. And that's one of the few things on here that are truly going back to the pre-pandemic norms.
So Stan, you earlier said you'd heard reference to people saying, oh, it's a buyer's market. This to me, of everything that we've talked about, seems like the only, the only case where that is true, essentially. Yes. From the numbers that we've talked about. Is that right?
That is right. And this is probably the big reason why this is one of the reasons why people, when they say, I think it's a buyer's market, this is one of the main things that they're looking at. They're also looking at things like days on market and whatnot. What they're experiencing is just recency bias, right? When your neighbor a couple of years ago sold their home for $300,000 and went under contract in 2 days, and it was listed for $285,000 and it sold for $300,000, and the buyer didn't ask for any closing costs because they couldn't, and the seller didn't have to do any repairs because they had negotiated it would be an as-is contract, all this kind of stuff. And now here you are in 2024, a few years later, and you're listing your house, your neighbor listed their house for $285,000 and sold it for $300,000. Well, you're looking at comps and you're still seeing, well, my house might only be worth $310,000, based on the comps, maybe $315,000. And you list it for $315,000 and then it takes several months to sell and it only sells for $305,000. Then the buyer asks for you to do repairs and all of that. You're comparing that to when the market was the unhealthiest and the most extreme seller's market that it has ever been. So that's not a fair comparison. That's not what constitutes the buyer's market, isn't the normalization of the most extreme seller's market of all time. It is all of the data, even if you go back to this period of time that we're talking about, 2017, 2018, 2019, that was still a seller's market. Okay. People forget that. It just wasn't, people have in their mind that a seller's market equals what 2020, mid 2020 through mid 2022 was. That is hopefully never going to happen again. Hopefully we'll never see a seller's market like that. That is the extreme of extremes when it comes to that. A seller's market is simply when demand outpaces supply. That's all that is. Demand outpaces supply. And historically speaking, when we have around in Greenville, around 4,000-ish, 4,100, 4,200 homes for sale, that's traditionally still a seller's market. Now, it honestly is even more of a seller's market now. There's more demand in the market now than there was back in 2018, 2017, 2019. How do we know that? Well, look at some of these other things that we've looked at. Look, pending sales, we've already talked about that, are generally speaking higher than most of these years were. Closed sales, generally speaking, higher than most of these years were. Now, we'll have to see the way the rest of this plays out. And again, demand is being suppressed right now on the basis of these higher rates. There's pent up demand that I've referenced now a few times, but here we are, you know, with inventory at similar levels to what it's been a few years ago. You should not confuse that with a seller's market, with a buyer's market. We're not there yet. What would it take for us to get there? We'd probably need to start getting into the high fours, is what I think. So again, the April number is going to be revised down. It's currently saying 4,493. That's going to get revised down into either the high threes or the low fours. So in my opinion, we're nowhere near what it would take for this to be, technically speaking, a true buyer's market.
Yeah, what you're describing would be a 25% increase over where we will be revised down to, which is just massive, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we're not there yet. Month supply of inventory. Got to be careful with this one because this is dividing the inventory of homes for sale, which I just said is inaccurate for the most recent months, by the pending sales from the last 12 months, which I already said is also inaccurate for the most recent months. So the April number of 3.6 is not going to be accurate. So it says it's 3.6 months supply of inventory. That's going to be wrong. That's going to be revised back down. Mostly, it'll probably be revised back down to somewhere between 3 and 3.2 months supply of inventory, which will still be a big increase year on year. But let's look back to March of 24. This number should be accurate by now. So it was 2.9 months of inventory, which was a 26% increase year on year over March of 23, which was 2.3 months of inventory. So this is also an indicator of the pressure relief valve for buyers, that there is more months supply of inventory. Now, historically speaking, being in the low threes, which is what that April number will get revised to, that is still historically a pretty low number, but it's starting to get pretty close to what the pre-pandemic numbers were. That's again something that buyers should be happy about, because this does factor in the demand side of things. Now, again, once rates go down, I suspect that month supply will go back down as well, and it'll be a little bit more of a constrained market as well. But that's not something that we have to worry about most likely for several months, if not a year or more, the way things are looking at the moment.
So a question I have here is, I know we've kind of established that it's not really a true buyer's market, but does this indicate that, like, if you're able to swallow the higher price or manage that and manage, you know, if you're willing to accept the higher interest rate that we've been experiencing recently, does this mean like, hey, it's a good time to go shopping and look around, or how do you see that fitting in here?
If you're a buyer in this market, you've got to think about, what do you know? Okay. Don't focus too much on the unknowns, because a lot of people have gotten hosed trying to focus on the unknowns, trying to time the market. A lot of buyers have been waiting for these mortgage rates to come down. Well, guess what? As the mortgage rates haven't come down, we've seen prices continue to go up. That's what we just looked at with the median price point. So for those that have been waiting for the past year, things are less affordable now than they were a year ago. So I personally prefer to focus on a known commodity. If you need to move, a common phrase that people say is marry the house and date the rate. Okay. What that means is buy the house that you love. If you have to hold your nose with the mortgage rate, because mortgage rates are temporarily high and the Fed has told us it is temporary, whether you believe them or not. And so you date the rate a couple of years from now, rates have gone down a point, 1.5 points, 2 points, whatever the case may be. You've already got the house that you want. Now you can refinance and now bring that payment down, you know, and make it more manageable. Hopefully your income has also increased during that time, et cetera, et cetera. But that's generally speaking, and again, generally speaking, good advice for people is marry the house, date the rate. You know, again, if you waited for those rates to go down, my fear for buyers is that they've waited too long, right? It's like waiting until, you know, until the day before Christmas to get in your Christmas shopping, or waiting, maybe a better example is waiting until, you know, the day of Halloween to find your Halloween costume. It's too late, right? The holiday is upon us. Everyone's already picked at everything. You're too late. You're really going to struggle. By the time the rates have come down, now all of that pent up demand, you know, it gets washed into the market, and now you're going to start to see those more extreme bidding wars. The all these other things we've been talking about that have started to normalize are going to become not normal again, is what I predict. So I'm a bit wary of, you know, waiting for additional normalization, because I think, quite frankly, that we're this the way it feels right now, this is probably about the best that it's going to be for quite some time for buyers.
It's really interesting the way that you kind of your guidance that you're suggesting here, because like for me, when I look at that, you know, as someone who's less experienced, I'm like, oh, it could be good, but like, yeah, that tendency to want to time the market, you've identified as, you know, really problematic. So I like the fact that, you know, what you're focused on is like making sure there's a good fit and making it work with what we've got, with what we know.
Yeah. And you know, I don't just say this as a realtor. I practice what I preach. When I moved a couple of years ago, I swallowed almost a double. My mortgage rate that I ended up with was almost double what it was at my old house. But it was time to move, you know, and the opportunity arose. The house that I really wanted, you know, became available. And, you know, again, I held my nose at the mortgage rate and said, hopefully these rates will come down in the future, but this is the house that I want. And I'm not gonna let it get past me. I mean, I've seen this over and over again. There are homes that my wife and I attempted to buy when we had no money back in, you know, 2010, that, you know, I could have bought for, you know, like 100,000, that I've seen now sell a few times since then, you know, in the high threes, low fours. You know, like this is the way the Greenville market is. We've got 22 people per day moving here, and that just creates a stable baseline of demand that ultimately causes prices to continue to go up. And so you control what you can control, right? What you can control, you can't control mortgage rates. What you can control is actually purchasing a home that you like right now. And so generally speaking, that's good advice for most buyers. But again, every situation is unique. Any other closing thoughts or questions about any of that before I conclude this thing out?
My closing thoughts are, this is a lot of fun. I learned a lot. I feel like there's a lot more I have to learn. So for me, it was really good to kind of get in there, kind of see what these numbers were about, but also see the pitfalls that are there. And I think you guided me through that really well, and I appreciate it. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks, Joel. Really appreciate it. And thank you guys for listening or for watching. Reminder, if you like this content, please like, rate, review, subscribe, particularly subscribe, so you don't miss it in the future, whatever podcast app you're using. If you're watching or listening on YouTube as well, same thing. And if you need a realtor in the Greenville area, I'm your guy. My contact information is in the show notes. If you need to reach out to Joel, reach out to me and I'll connect you with Joel. And thank you guys once again. And we will talk again next time.